Stand by for action.
Gamer's Haven Special Edition.
This is Ethan with the Gamer's Haven Podcast, and I had the distinct pleasure to sit down with Mr. Shane Lacey Hensley from Pinnacle Entertainment Group, the creator of the Deadlands role-playing game and numerous other settings and also game systems. Mr. Hensley took some time out of his very busy schedule to talk to me about game design, his career, and various other aspects of the gaming hobby. So sit back and enjoy. As always, you can come by our website at gamershavenpodcast.com and find a selection in our Amazon store of Shane Lacey Hensley products. Sit back and enjoy the interview. And if you have any questions or comments, please hit our website at gamershavenpodcast.com. FRP Games is an online retailer specializing in all aspects of your tabletop gaming needs. Whether it's RPGs, dice, war games, or computer games, FRP Games has a wide selection of products. They offer overstock items where you can pick up all kinds of gaming gear ranging from 30% off all the way up to 90% off the retail price. Through our website, you'll be directed to their weekly new products, eBay auctions, or you can even buy your special gaming someone a gift certificate. FRP Games is an authorized Wizards of the Coast retailer and for 10 years has been committed to providing each customer with the highest standard of customer service possible. Visit our website for instant access to FRP Games inventory of thousands of unique gaming items.
VORPA Network is the bomb, the cutting edge of geekdom. Comics, advice, D&D, movies, video games, RPGs. Finding it easy, just stay calm. VorpalNetwork.com.
Well, this is Ethan with the Gamer's Haven Podcast, and I have the distinct pleasure to be here with Mr. Shane Hensley, or do you prefer Shane Lacey Hensley?
Nope, Shane's fine.
Shane's fine, all right. Now, this is a guy who I think some people ought to recognize as far as the name on their gaming shelf, because I know I went and I looked at your resume, as it were, and it's about as long as my arm.
I've been around a while.
You have been. Obviously, what you are the best known for, at least in my circle, is Deadlands.
Yep.
Being the fantastic game it is. And we run currently have a actual play podcast of Deadlands that's just hit about 25 episodes, been going on for over a year now. So we're all big fans of that here.
Great. Well, I appreciate it.
But let's go ahead and travel back a little bit. One question I like to ask everyone I talk to is, how did you get into gaming in general? Not the gaming industry, but how did you first pick up the dice and get into this really cool hobby?
Yeah, I was a comic book nerd, and where I lived in Chesapeake, Ohio, and later Flintwood, Virginia, there were no bookstores or game stores or anything like that. But in the back of the comics, I guess, grocery store, there was an ad for Dungeons & Dragons one time. And it was the one older readers may remember. It ended with, "Greetings, mortal worm." And I just thought that was the coolest thing, and I was just trying to find out more about it. And strangely enough, back then, it was actually carried in the Sears catalog.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so my mother ordered the basic set for me. And then I started playing with my friends and cousins, and of course we did everything wrong, but, you know, looking back on it, it's a tough game to learn conceptually if you've only played Monopoly and stuff before.
That's true, but you had fun anyway, obviously.
You did, absolutely. And I just grew from there.
And that sent you down the long, spiraling, you know, path of decay that you are at now, right?
That's right.
So what made you decide to start designing games and get into the business?
I was running games for my college group, and we got into a game called Torque, which I just loved. Mm-hmm. And I wrote an adventure for it that everybody seemed to like really well, and they suggested I send it in to West End Games. I did. Mm-hmm. And they accepted on spec, which meant that, yes, we'll buy it if you do all these corrections.
Right.
So I actually did the corrections, which I guess was kind of unusual. And they approved it, and I paid for it. And then I just kept doing more and more stuff for them, and then on the TSR and FOSSA and everybody else.
Excellent, excellent. So... And I noticed on your list of stuff you've done, when you went over to really you worked. So you did. I'm sorry, I'm sort of jumping around a little bit, but you did freelance for West End.
I sure did for West End, FOSSA, TSR, and then computer game companies like SSI, yeah. And I even did an educational computer game for the Department of Agriculture.
Ooh. What? Just curious. What did you do with SSI? Because I remember SSI.
Yeah, I did scenario design for Panzer General,
and
then I created a world for them called Thunderscape.
Uh-huh.
They did two games based off of, and then they got bought by another company, so they canceled the series. But
right.
they did. I think it was called World of Aden was the game they released in the Thunderscape line.
Mm-hmm.
Then they had an outsourced party do one called Entomorph, which was kind of neat. It was set down with all these giant insects, kind of like Tyranids and stuff from Games Workshop.
Right.
Now that I think back on it.
Rings a slight bell. I had some of the SSI stuff on my old Commodore.
Yep.
Classics one. Classic.
And I'm still in touch and do business frequently with the same guys that I worked with all the way back then. So it's been great.
Yeah, you definitely have your fingers in a lot of pies from what I understand.
I do.
But in your early days... you did some work at TSR, and you did some work with one of my personal favorite settings that I've never, ever had the chance to play, Dark Sun.
Yeah, I loved Dark Sun.
What do you think about the new one coming out?
You know, I don't know much about it, so I really don't have anything to say, but I'm excited that Dark Sun's alive by anyone or in any capacity. That's great.
Yep. What did you do for the old Dark Sun?
I did two projects. I did Earth, Fire, Water, and Air, which was the Cleric source book.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did a big box set called City by the Silt Sea, which was about this huge rune,
mm-hmm.
Ruin that was sunken in silt. And just a ton of fun to do.
That was I think I remember that one. It had a really wacky monster in it. I can't remember what it was.
Me either, but you're right. There was some big end boss kind of monster in it, to put it in video game terms.
Yeah,
for the life of me, I can't remember it now either.
Yeah, I just thought of it just because I was talking to someone about it the other day. Oh, well. Yeah.
Yeah.
My only exposure to Dark Sun was through the SSI, I think it was SSI computer games. Didn't they do those? Or was that after
SSI?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep, they did.
Just through that, and I fell in love with Dark Sun just through that, so...
Yep.
Actually,
it was going to be one of the first MMOs they were going to do Dark Sun Online.
Ooh. Oh, that would have made me happy.
I was like, yeah, it would have been huge. I mean, Ultima Online had just come out, and
mm-hmm.
they wanted to do Dark Sun. I don't know what happened. I wasn't, I was a freelancer, but boy, I was excited about that.
That's too bad. While we're on the subject of video games, for a while they were going to do a Deadlands video game, weren't they? Not SSI.
I've tried three times, actually, to get Deadlands video games made. So
really?
A quick recount of that. We did our own in 1997 called Crimson Rails, which was based in Great Rail Wars. And we had a fully playable 2D version of that. I think it's still available on our website somewhere to download.
Oh, cool.
God only knows what it would run like on computers these days. But I think
sure.
Then we licensed it out to a company called Head First, and they were going to make an MMO based off of it, and they had partnered with Sony. And we were all excited. It looked like a really great deal. And then Sony got the Terminator license and the Marvel Superhero license, and they decided those were bigger than us, and they were going to do that.
Right.
Head First went ahead and tried to do a PS2 version of Deadlands, and they did three playable levels. It's actually fantastic. I've played it many times.
Uh-huh.
But they could not find a publisher. It was right at the time of the PS2 was going out, and the Xbox 360 was coming out, and it was a triple-play title. Nobody wanted to invest I think it was $6 or $8 million into a game for a console that was being outdated.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've always had the same problem too, where our publishers are frequently worried about how a Western will sell.
Right.
And it's something we run into constantly. And you know, I show them my sales and what we've done, and they kind of get over it for a while, but then some marketing guy comes in and says, "Nope, Westerns don't sell." So that put an end to that. And then the mm-hmm. third time, I actually came here to Arizona to build it myself with Cheyenne Mountain. And
right.
It was a not-so-well-kept secret that that's what I was here to do. But then Cheyenne Mountain folded. And,
right.
Deadlands died about a year ago, and then we helped work on a different project after that.
Mm-hmm. And I think the big thing that you guys recently got out was Stargate Resistance, wasn't it?
Yep. I worked on that with the crew over there, and that... Cheyenne Mountain has since ceased to exist,
right.
But there is a new company formed out of it that is licensing the game and paying royalties mm-hmm. to what's left of CME to try to pay some of its back debt.
Right.
Me and I'm no longer affiliated with any of that. Me and a few
sure.
other guys are off and are doing our own thing.
Sure, excellent. What can you tell me about the game itself, just for the benefit of our listeners?
About Stargate?
Stargate Resistance, yes.
Yeah, so it is a third-person shooter, meaning you get to see your character and all the cool costumes that he has and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And there are three multiplayer maps, and you get ranks and achievements. And it's fairly simple, but I think it's a great $20 shooter, and you can try it on Steam or on the website at StargateResistance.com.
And it is, contrary to what anyone thinks, it is available. So
that's right.
That's excellent, and we're big Stargate fans over here, so I'm going to check that one out. And you said it is on
great.
Steam?
Uh-huh.
Excellent, excellent. Well, back in 1996, you put out a tiny little game called Deadlands. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, of course, it was Pinnacle Entertainment Group, and you started that company, correct?
That's right, yep.
All right. Well, what was sort of the inception behind Deadlands? What got you cracking on that?
I guess it's a fairly famous story at this point, but there was a White Wolf magazine at Gen Con 2 years prior to that, so probably would have been 1994.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the cover to Necropolis Atlanta on there. Now, I didn't know that's what it was at the time, but it was a Brahm painting of this, I guess he was a vampire, but he was an undead soldier to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was driving home from Gen Con. It's about a 16-hour trip. And I just kept thinking about that image and who was that guy and what was his story.
Right.
And I thought, this is some cowboy who was just too tough to die. And that phrase kind of stuck in my head. And we went home. I didn't think, and then I ran a one-shot in we called them the Monday night games, where we just did different kinds of settings.
Sure.
And I ran this adventure in what was to become Deadlands, and everybody went nuts over it. And I said, okay, well, let's publish this. And we thought we'd sell 2,000 copies and be done, mm-hmm. and then we'd do the post-apocalyptic version, which, of course, is Hell on Earth.
Right.
And we'd sell 2,000 copies of that and be done, and that was fine. I was going into the CIA. I didn't make a career out of this. But then Deadlands took off, and here we are today.
Sure. Excellent. You were going to go work for the CIA, huh? Oh, that's.
Yeah, my major in college was political science and Russian.
Oh, really? Wow.
My master's is in special ops, of all things.
So, in other words, we don't want to piss you off. In other words,
well, I just cut it. I don't do it.
Okay. But with Deadlands, ironically, actually, we talked to Christopher McLaughlin a couple weeks back, and
uh-huh.
I believe he was the one who did Tales of Terror, the update for 1877,
yep.
I think.
Yep, that's right. Yep.
Gosh. And when you set out and put out Deadlands, you did one thing that a lot of places or a lot of people didn't do was you sort of wove in a sort of really, for lack of a better term, a Lost-esque storyline in there of a plan counting down to 1998.
Yep, sure did.
And that was Hell on Earth, wasn't it?
Yep, and the actual there were clues throughout the even the first printing that all that was coming. If you looked in the headers and stuff, the Reckoners were spelled out as the Four Horsemen and so on. And it was it was a big deal. It was kind of funny, though, because when we were working on The Big Secret, it was what we called it, 498, which was, of course, was Hell on Earth, we were partnered with Alderac at the time. Uh-huh. And John Zinder, who's normally a marketing genius, I think was a little stumped as to how to market a game he couldn't talk about, couldn't even say the name of. So I think we drove him a little crazy there, but... You know, it was such a great event. We held it at Gen Con, and we had, I think we sold like, I want to say 500 books at Gen Con, in the collector's edition and the regular. And we had a line of like 300 people lined up around the show there to see us. And we had a procession where the books were brought in this radioactive box and so on.
I know. I was there.
Oh, were you? Well, that was really neat. It was fantastic.
The
energy and enthusiasm. You know, that's what you live for if you're in this business. And I'll never forget.
Is there a, I know you guys have been working on it for a bit, but skipping ahead a bit for Hell on Earth, is you guys are currently hard at work on Hell on Earth Reloaded, right?
Yeah, it's actually written. We're just bottlenecking production. You know, we only have one actual full-time guy. The rest of our staff is all part-time or virtual. Mm-hmm. And just trying to coordinate the art and everything else to get it laid out and finished up.
Sure.
With, you know, we have Weird Wars and all our other lines and the core deadlines, bugs and everything else. It's really not, it's not an issue of it not being written or polished or anything. The manuscript's been gone through a bazillion times by now. It's, you know, purely just a layout, editing, and art, or a layout and art issue.
And speaking of Reloaded, Deadlands Reloaded came out a couple years back, right after, you know, Savage Worlds did its thing, or really did its thing, it's doing its thing. And you guys are putting out, I believe it was just announced, they're reprinting Deadlands Reloaded as a, splitting it back up into two books.
Yeah, we've had a lot of people ask us for a player's manual since there's so much secret information in there. And I guess it's something that we did maybe even too well in Deadlands, where we split things up into the player section and the marshal section. And, you know, we never really expected people to take it so seriously, but they really have. And marshals really don't want their players to read that stuff. So splitting it up into two books and letting the players actually have something in their hands they don't have to feel so edgy about all the time,
right?
I think is something a lot of folks ask for, so that's what we did.
Now, you did the design. Did you actually write the physical book for the first Deadlands incarnation?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Now, the people might not have read that. It's has a very interesting narrative style in it. How did you, because you'd done stuff before then, how did you tackle writing that in that different vein? Because it's much more of a story, sort of story-driven, I sort of find myself at a loss of words to describe it, you know?
Yeah, well, it's I guess it's very conversational,
right.
And it's very, it's chummy, you know, you feel like the author has his arm around you while you're reading it. And that's kind of how I felt about it, you know, and it's honestly, I don't mean to sound... I can blab anything here, but it's honestly how I feel about our customers. You know, I go to the shows and I hang out with them, and almost I can't count the number of friends I've made from doing that. But, you know, we talk constantly and to this day about it.
Right.
So when I write books that allow me to do so, that is my voice. You know, that's the voice I like to speak in. When I'm doing something like Savage Worlds, which is core rules, it, oddly enough, you know, I've gotten a lot of wonderful compliments about Deadlands and how readable it is. Strangely, a lot of people have said, strangely to me, a lot of people have said the Savage Worlds isn't so readable. I guess it's because I make that more of a reference, so that when you're playing, you hop to the rule real quick, you read it, and you hop out. It's not meant to be read cover to cover. But I've always found that kind of interesting, because to me, it's still all my voice in the same conversational tone, but obviously it's not.
And speaking of Savage Worlds, Deadlands, of course, led to your miniatures game, The Great Rail Wars, right? And then those rules pretty much led to Savage Worlds.
Correct.
And what do you have to say about the fan reaction and the community reaction that has grown around Savage Worlds?
Now, we had Deadlands was doing really well in 97 when we put out Great Rail Wars. Mm-hmm. And then with the miniatures game, we just saw tons of people come in and get excited about it. And that and Doomtown, the card game that Alderac did, mm-hmm. just, we probably quintupled our fan base within those 2 years, and that was just fantastic. But the reaction to Great Rail Wars itself and playing it and watching gals play it as well as guys and see how much fun they had and how easy it was and how exciting and fast-paced, that really stuck with me. So when the reason that I did Savage Worlds was because Deadlands went through a really bad slump the same time the company did. Mm-hmm. And it was about the time D20 hit, everybody was playing D&D again. And we did Deadlands D20, and we sold a ton of books, but we never really embraced it or got into it. It's probably the double-edged sword that, mm-hmm. that really hurt us at the time. I remember people were at conventions telling us that we had gone completely D20 and we'd sold out.
Mm-hmm.
We were doing dual-statted books.
Right.
We thought that was a compromise. And at the time, everybody really thought, this is the way the whole industry is going to go, and if you're not doing it, you're dead. But we weren't really into it. I was never really a big 3.0 and 3.5 fan. It's just a little mm-hmm. too heavy for me. So Deadlands was dying. The company was dying. I was in really bad financial shape at the time. And I said, I've got this idea. I just want to do it before I quit and go work for the government or whatever it is I'm going to do. So I'm going to throw my heart into this thing because I want to, and we'll see how people react. So we put that out, I think it was 2003,
mm-hmm.
and it went really solid right from the start. It wasn't as big as it was today, obviously, but it was really solid and had good sales. It was probably at half what Deadlands was
mm-hmm.
Before the slump hit, which, to start out was just fantastic.
Right.
And we put out Evernight and 50 Fathoms and Rippers and Necessary Evil, and the fan base just kept growing and growing. And then when we did the licensing and all these other companies got involved, now we're, geez, I don't know, 6-7 times what we mm-hmm. were back then. And one of the things that I'm really proud of is our $10 rule book.
Oh, yeah.
At a time when so many games are so expensive, including our own, the big mm-hmm. hardbacks. So I'm not really pointing fingers here,
but sure.
including myself. But having a rule book for $10
mm-hmm.
in color is just fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Part my idea and part Frank Gumanowicz, who runs Studio 2, who's our partners.
Mm-hmm. Now, I can't tell you how that was a big factor in me picking up the Savage Worlds book was the $10 Explorer's Guide. That was, my brother agrees with me, was just a brilliant idea. So.
It was the right time, so I'm real happy how that worked out.
Mm-hmm. And you guys are going, you guys keep running out of those and reprinting them as well, so.
We're up to the fourth printing now. So
fourth printing, congratulations.
Yeah.
Congratulations. And now that Deadlands, of course, has been out for about, 13 or 14 years, looking back at it, what do you think? I mean, you sort of live in shock that it's been that long since it came out and it's still here?
Yes, I do, actually, every day. And it's such a near and dear thing to my heart. Every time I talk about starting a new project or a new company or anything I'm doing, especially on the computer game side, the first question everybody asks me is, are you going to do Deadlands?
Mm-hmm.
And, from my point of view, I've tried 3 times with the computer game, and all 3 have ended in, I don't want to say disaster, but
right.
they didn't happen. And so I'm kind of trepidatious about it.
Mm-hmm.
I've got 50 other ideas that I don't have such emotional investment in.
Sure.
But when I don't immediately leap to it, everybody's just completely shocked that, it is not the be-all and end-all of my life. And on the subconscious level, it absolutely is. I mean, it is what I want to do, but I always feel like with the company I'm at now, the computer game company, I feel like we should do a few other things. And then when I have the right resources and people to do it right and not fail again,
right.
I want to do it and I want to do it right.
Excellent. And not too long ago, or really sort of a while back, You developed more settings, obviously, for Savage Worlds, and you mentioned a few of them in there with 50 Fathoms and that sort of thing. The one that the other one I've heard of that sort of gets me curious is Weird War 2. What is that?
Yeah, so I was a big fan. I told you I was a comic book nerd. I was a big fan of Weird War Tales by DC Comics growing up. And, you know, I loved Twilight Zone and all that stuff. And when we were messing around with new game ideas in, I'm not sure when it was, probably 2000, it was just the first thing that came to mind. And John Hoppler and I put it together and released it under the D20 system. And I think the setting was good and the background was good and all that, but D20 doesn't lend itself very well to modern military action with bullets flying and artillery and planes and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
So that was okay, but the Savage Worlds version is just incredible. So I had to toot our own horn here, but I run this scenario a couple of times at some conventions, and we've got, I think, a dozen tanks on the board and probably 50, 60 soldiers, including, you know, werewolves and zombies and all that kind of stuff, alongside a five-man RPG session that's doing a strike inside this insane asylum to turn off these generators that are affecting all the zombies out there. And we do that in about an hour and a half.
Nice.
And it's fun, and everybody's shouting and yelling and having a great time. And that's what I love, that energy and enthusiasm. And you roll those dice, and you get a couple of aces, and you see the guy's eyes light up. Whoa! That's amazing.
Yep. I see it when I run my Deadlands game. So
awesome.
You worked from moving a little away from Pinnacle for the time being. You did some work with Eden Studios, and diving back into Wild West and Zombies. You did their Fistful of Zombies book. And how was writing that in, or how was tackling that project? How did that sort of ring with the Deadlands writer in you there?
Well, you know, I've done a couple of projects with Eden. Actually, my favorite, that one was, I think that one was primarily written by other folks.
Okay.
And we did the conversion for it.
Oh, okay.
And then I can't remember who all helped with that, but, you know, I did Army of Darkness with him, and then the foreword to All Flesh. But everything I do with George is a blast. He's fantastic. And Unisystem doesn't really click for me. It doesn't have that screening factor I was just talking about.
Sure.
But, you know, it's a good solid system, and you can certainly look right at it and use it for whatever you want, D20 or Savage Worlds, or just use it as is. And I like the Buffy cinematic version pretty well. But system aside, you know, everything he's created, I love his, can't remember the name of it, the ape setting. What was that called?
Oh, Terra Primate, I think?
Yeah, Terra Primate. Just brilliant. You know, I just chuckled the whole way through that and loved it. I love all the All-Flesh books. Just, and George is just a pure pleasure to work with. One of the best guys in the industry.
Right. And speaking of the Army of Darkness book, that's the second small connection. I guess that's not even a small connection. That's the second connection you have to Bruce Campbell, because didn't he write? He wrote a foreword for one of the Deadlands books at one point, didn't he?
He sure did. We met at the 1997 Origins, where we were both guests, and I asked him to do a foreword for us, and he did it for both Deadlands and for one of our anthologies.
Nice.
And he was extremely gracious. Didn't charge us a penny. I called up a couple of times to ask for some pointers or some editing advice or whatever. And
sure.
It was just nothing nothing but a professional.
Excellent. Nothing. Yeah, I've met him twice, too, so he's I'm a big fan of his. So.
Yeah, me too.
I see Bruce Campbell in the Deadlands book, and I'm like, ooh, okay, this is good.
Same here.
Well, looking back at Deadlands over the last 15 years, what are your thoughts on where it's gone?
Yeah, that's so interesting to me, because we started with this very definite plan to bring the Reckoners out and do Hell on Earth and then do Lost Colony and have it up in space. It was really designed more as a one-shot, but took off into what should have been its own line had it come out at a more fortuitous time, and will be again. But what Matthew Cutter is doing with it these days, he's taken all these seeds and nuggets that we designed years ago, and it's just blossomed it into such a well-developed, fully-fledged story. And now, what's really great to me is we wrote Deadlands at a time of the metaplot. There were metaplots in Earthdawn and Shadowrun and Legend of Five Rings and all those games. And that was great. But now with plot point adventures, we really can help people actually experience them without being led by the nose and without being forced to save the world or, you know, save the princess kind of adventures.
Sure.
And that's really cool to me because that story and background that's so integral to the IP gets to be there, but you still feel like you're charting your own destiny, which I think is really important to the players.
Sorry, my dog is trying to get comfortable. Okay. Speaking of Deadlands, and since it's been out for 15 years now, other people have had a chance to really play in that sandbox and write material for it and do things with it. Has any of that surprised you?
Yeah, I would say some of the Hell on Earth stuff actually has surprised me a bit more. Hard to think of the details on the spot all of a sudden, but there are constantly things I'll read in the book. You know, there's kind of the holy canon stuff, which we don't let anybody really mess with other than the schedule that I set.
Sure.
But there's so many neat little details. Like, I think Steve Long in his Psychers book created a character for the life of me, I can't remember what his name is now, that really blossomed into something that everybody was excited about and talked about forever, and he became kind of a big deal when Hell on Earth was big. And that was really cool to see stuff like that because it lets me kind of be a fan too and just read and enjoy what all these other guys have done.
Right. Excellent. Well, starting to wind things down here, is there anything that you're working on or Pinnacle's working on that you're excited about or that we should get excited about?
Well, I think it's pretty common knowledge now that we're doing a Savage Worlds version of Space 1889. I'm a huge fan of the original, Frank Chadwick's work, and I think the plot point campaign that Matt Cutter and Bill Reger did is just excellent. People are going to be really excited about it. And what's great there, again, is you get to experience all the Space 1889 great bits, but you have an actual big story to play and finish and move on with, and that's really cool. And then the other thing that I'm personally excited about, because I play so much Savage Worlds in so many different settings, is our Adventure and Action deck are coming out. And we have the Adventure deck in PDF that people can buy, but we've done up a better, cleaner, even nicer version that's going to come out in print late summer, and that'll be combined in a double deck with the Action deck, which is just standard playing cards with our art on them. Those will be regular size. Some people have wanted them smaller than the big ones we use. I think those are awesome, because between those and the poker chips and stuff that we did last summer,
sure,
you really have a custom, completest kind of experience, and I'm a big nerd like that.
And you guys are going to be at Gen Con this year, right?
Oh, yeah.
You'll be there again? Excellent. I will be there as well this time, so I missed it last year.
Yeah, and for those who don't know, we do Savage Saturday Night, and what that is we rent a room somewhere, usually at the adjacent hotel, and we just run tons of pickup games. I run something. I ran that big World War II adventure I just mentioned a moment ago there. And we had probably a dozen 14 games there last year, all with, you know, 6 to 16 players for some of them.
Wow.
And it's a blast. It's just kind of a party atmosphere, and it's just great to see everybody in play and just enjoy it.
I might have to track that down this year. That sounds great. I'm actually a recent convert within the last year to Savage Worlds. I was one of those holdouts who was like, no, I like the old Deadland system. I like the old Deadland. And then I was about 2 years ago at Gen Con. I went to the Pinnacle booth and walked up to a guy and said, okay, tell me about Savage Worlds. And I walked away with a copy of Swex and the Deadlands special edition book. So
that just goes to prove that Swex sells.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It at $10, you know, I'm sorry. Yeah. It's just like, wow. That's just the perfect price point for it. I know that's just entirely, you know, off the point, but it is. It's just a great, great, great idea. You've mentioned plot point campaigns a few times here. And for the benefit of our listeners, what are the plot point campaigns?
Okay, so probably the easiest analogy to make for them is something like the strategic game in the strategic map in a lot of computer games.
Right.
So maybe there's a, conceptually at least, there's a big map of some area, and there's lots of locations that are kind of lit up for you to go explore.
Right.
Now, how we actually communicate those in each setting in a non-computer game, of course, is particular to that setting. Usually there's adventure generators, maybe there's maps, maybe there's props. We try to avoid, we have to do some of the military stuff where you're told, you go here, you go there.
Right.
But in the other places, we really try to make you choose what to do. So in the FUD, for example, for Deadlands, there are secret messages placed in the tombstone epitaph by Lacey O'Malley.
Mm-hmm.
And you're given those periodically. If you choose to go investigate them, then you'll get involved in those plots.
Right.
The locations you visit or the adventures you get drawn into are a mix of Savage Tales, some of which are plot points.
Mm-hmm.
The Savage Tales, of course, is just an adventure. A plot point is an adventure that leads you to the big finale.
Sure.
So let's say in a book like The Flood, maybe there's 100 Savage Tales. There's probably 7, including the big finale, that help you defeat Reverend Grimm and all the stuff that happens in that book. I don't want to give any spoilers away.
Mm-hmm.
But those can be interspersed and played and altered and so forth as the GM wishes. But you will be led to them by the way the plot point leads the group around. And clues point to things that will take you into those specific adventures and so on. So it feels like a very natural progression as opposed to now do this, now do this, now do this, now do this.
Right.
50 Fathoms is probably an easier one to illustrate. It literally is a map of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And when you and your crew sail your ship to different places, there's a list of things that the GM can very quickly and easily read about and have happen.
Right.
Some of those are marked with the plot point symbol that will eventually lead you into the big tale to fight the 3 sea hags that are the ones drowning the world.
Right. That's fascinating. I mean, how did the idea for the plot points come around?
Well, I did Evernight first, which was a scripted campaign, sort of. It is kind of do this, except many spots in the adventure you're given the choice of several things to do. But as we did that, even that felt too linear for us.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought, how can we integrate the backstory that we want to tell, but still let people feel like they're doing their own thing?
Right.
And we kind of brainstormed about it, and we thought, well, you know, computer games do that pretty well. And we were thinking about games like Darklands or some of the older titles like that. Sid Meier's Pirates. There's quite a few that do that. And that seemed to work really well, if you could just figure out how to stage them, how to give the proper clues, and give the GM some help when the players went off the map, so to speak, and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Now, we're getting down to the last two questions I've got that I pretty much ask everybody I talk to. So, when was the last time that you got to pick up some dice and play a game?
Well, I'm a Warhammer nerd, and we play a lot of Warhammer miniatures games, but not too long ago.
You too, huh?
Oh, yeah. Big fan. Not too long ago, I ran a campaign using the actual Warhammer miniatures battles rules at RPG rules, which worked surprisingly well if you just add bennies, and aren't looking to run a year-long campaign. This was a 6-7 session kind of deal, but it was a group of dark elves sent into the vampire lands, Sylvania, and so on.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the armies. It's one of the armies I play is vampires. So.
I have dark elves and vampire counts. This is why I use these as the
campaign.
But they had to track down the two players were leading two different groups that I ran on two different nights, and they were brothers competing for the throne of their house or whatever, like in the dark elf land.
Right.
And they were trying to track down their father and his missing banner, who had gone on this mission to Sylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, being Dark Elves, they're plotting and scheming against each other all the way.
Sure.
So it was half role-play session where they would go through a castle and find some cool weapons or something that they could use in tabletop,
mm-hmm.
and half skirmish tabletop where their troops, whoever they could gather and find and recruit, heal and protect and so on, to build their armies for the big final confrontation. And it was one of the most fun things we ever did. The coolest part about it, I guess, is each group was made up of 5 or 6 people.
Mm-hmm.
And the two players who were playing the brothers were in real life going to those people and giving them to spy for them. Paying them actual money or in-game money or items or whatever to spy on them and give reports on their brother's activities. And it was just hilarious. We had so much fun.
Oh, that sounds awesome, actually. Wow.
It was.
Well, the last question I always ask, and you've touched on it here and there in our conversation so far, but one thing the Gamers Haven is big about is sort of spreading the love of the tabletop hobby and sort of spreading awareness of it. What is it about the tabletop hobby that keeps you coming back to it? What is it that keeps you smiling?
What a great question. There are two answers to that. One is I love the subjectivity of pen and paper RPGs over computer games. I love computer games. I design and play those too. But I love being able to do things that are not in the rules. You know, I want to make up some cool with my friends, I'll call it a Shane plan, and try some crazy action. It may end disastrously, but it sure is a lot of fun. And that leads directly into the second part, which is watching everybody just have such a great time and smile and laugh, keep up that energy. And when you fail spectacularly or succeed to some amazing height, everybody at the table is just grinning and laughing and having a great time.
Yep.
You know, you just can't beat that. And I think many of us who are gamers and have tight-knit groups know that our gamer friends are our gamer friends for life. We stay in touch. We're, especially with modern help like Facebook and so on. I mean, my friends from college that I haven't seen in 15 years on a daily basis, they come to Gen Con or Origins or whenever they can just to come and play and hang out, talk daily. That kind of camaraderie and friendship is kind of what life's all about.
Right. I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to me tonight. I know you're very busy, and thank you very much.
Yeah, I appreciate your interest and the interest of all those who wind up listening.
This is Ethan with the Gamers Haven podcast, and I'm here to tell you about CantCon. For those of us who can't con, there's CantCon. CantCon will be held at the Johnson County Community College Regnier Center in Overland Park, Kansas, in the Capitol Federal Conference Room on July 9th through the 11th between 8 a.m. and 10 p.m. There will be RPG events, board game events, card game events, miniatures games, as well as open gaming tables for impromptu sessions. Pre-registration is open currently, and if you pre-register, you'll receive an additional chance to win swag at CantCon. We have over $2,500 worth of prizes to give away over the course of the convention, and we hope to give it all away. In addition, if you pre-register, you can get a 3-day pass for only $25. If you're only interested in coming one day at a time, you can for only $10 a day. There will be registration available at the door, but you'll have less of a chance to win free prizes that way. Join us at Johnson County Community College for CantCon on July 9th through the 11th, from beginning at 8 a.m. daily. Visit www.cantcon.com for more information. You've been listening to the Gamers Haven Podcast. Subscribe to the show by visiting our website at gamershavenpodcast.com, where you can also discuss all things gaming in our forum, drop us an email, or just peruse our episode archives. You can also call us toll-free and leave a message to be played on the show by dialing 1-877-416-1270. That's toll-free, 877-416-1270. On our website, you'll also find our actual play podcasts chronicling our misadventures through all things role-playing. Enjoy what you hear? Why not support the Gamers Haven by purchasing Gamers Haven merchandise, visiting our affiliates, or just by clicking on our donate button? The Gamers Haven podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 United States license, some rights reserved. Some music in this podcast is used with permission of Joe Hero Band at joehero.com. This is a Thousand Monkeys production.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.